Hey guys, welcome to the Challenge Podcast. I'm Coach Steve.
And I'm Coach Nick, and we're going to be talking about everything fitness, health, and the challenge.
Let's get on with the show.
What's up guys, Coach Steve here, and welcome back to another episode of the Challenge Weekly Show. I'm here with our co-host, Coach Nick. Nick, how are you doing today?
I'm very, very well, Coach Steve. How are you?
I'm good. It's an exciting week of the challenge. We've just wrapped up the August challenge completely. So we had our awards night on Friday night last week, and that was a really fun event, wasn't it, Nick?
Oh, it was excellent. It was so good to get some new grand champions and to celebrate our first six-week challenge and celebrate the transformations that occurred. They were amazing.
It was a very fun event, and it was great to see. There was about 100 people watching in live, which is awesome for a live event. Yep. Not without its own technical difficulties. My computer had its own mind of its own during the event, which is cool, which is fine. But you're right, Nick, we got to celebrate our first six-week challenge and the amazing transformations people were able to achieve over that six-week period, which is awesome to see. And look, I'm excited for our next challenge, which starts this weekend. Nick, are you excited?
Oh, it's absolutely amazing. I love the fact that we're just flowing right on through. So I love that sort of thing. We can't lose any momentum. So that's pretty much one of my key values, just keep going. So I'm right ready to go.
Well, that's it. So this Friday from 9 a.m., you'll be able to log into the challenge website for the November challenge. So from Friday, you have Friday, Saturday, Sunday as prep weekends, so 3 days to prepare for the challenge. You can go and test out some of the training programs. You can go set up your profile and maybe change your program if you'd like to. You can set up your nutrition, go shopping and prepare for that, and do all the good things in the challenge. So you have lots of time to prepare for that challenge that kicks off on the 1st of November. Now, if you're wanting to join us, it's not too late to join. You could sign up today. You could sign up on Friday. You could sign up even up into that first week of the six-week challenge. So it's going to be an awesome one. And we are wrapping up just before Christmas, Nick. So it's going to be an awesome summer and Christmas challenge.
That's right. I mean, how good will that be? You put your hard 6 weeks in, then you go to the Christmas party looking amazing. So, and then you head to the beach looking amazing. It sounds absolutely perfect, doesn't it?
It really does. Mm-hmm. I remember when I was younger, Nick, and I've been pretty fortunate that I've been able to travel quite a bit when I was younger. And I would go places like, you know, parts of Europe or parts of America and speaking to people about summer and summertime always being really hot, right? Like Christmas time. So talking to people about Christmas time and Christmas time always being really hot. And I'd say like, oh yeah, you know, we'd have Santa come and visit us and we'll be sitting in the lounge room in just a pair of shorts because it was too hot and we're opening up presents. And people just couldn't fathom that, being like, oh, well, no, like Christmas time is always like snow and there's, you know, it's cold and, you know, you're eating warm food and you're cuddling inside. I'm like, no, that's always hot. You know, you're going to the beach, you're doing something cool. So I like that our Christmas is always nice and warm and fun and exciting. And that's I feel sorry for some children growing up watching like Christmas movies and it's always like snowy or like, you know, buying fake snow for their Christmas tree and such, when it's always really hot in Australia. But anyway, that's my little rant about Christmas time. And we're gonna be wrapping up this challenge leading up into Christmas, which is always gonna be good.
Yeah, excellent. And what a nice celebration just to finish the challenge just before Christmas. So let's get going with the new one and let's see some results happening again.
Now, Nick, for this next challenge, we are introducing a few new features to our plans. So the first one being the new hybrid program, which is coming in, which is going to be a mix of our weight loss programs, which would be like Lean and Ripped and Tone and Shape. And that is mixed in with some of our muscle building programs like Size and Strength and Get Strong. So it's going to be a fun program for those who want a little bit of both worlds. And it's going to be a couple of days of strength training, a couple of days of cardio, and it could be really helpful for that individual who wants to try to lose a little bit of body weight, but then they also enjoy some strength training in between. So hybrid program, give that a go. It's going to be lots of fun.
Yeah, I think it's really going to link. It was the missing link. So it's going to be phenomenal. Can't wait for that one.
It's going to be good. And I've also spent a little bit of time updating the nutrition template. So the nutrition template has a few new features, some including the option to input your own calories into the plan and input your own protein targets into the plan. And then you can also revert the program to some previous styles that we had where you can set each serving to a certain calorie amount, meaning that if you want every protein serve to be 150 calories, you can. If you want every energy serving to be 100 calories, you can. So that's all in that front page where you input your information. So lots of nice little features there. And then I've also gone through and added a few extra spaces to add in more serves of food. So if you're familiar with our current program, there might be one serve of protein, two serves of energy, and three serves of fruits and vegetables. We've gone through and made it an option where you can add in more serves. So you could have one protein, three energy, and then two fruits and vegetables if you want, or one protein, one energy, and five servings of fruits and vegetables if you want. So lots of flexibility coming in with this new updated nutrition template.
Oh, that sounds so good. And also what we need to do is really remind people that the explanations are all in the videos. So just watch the videos one by one, and then it will become fairly easy as to how to complete the nutrition template if you haven't done it before, because it's all there, isn't it?
Yeah, so I have gone through and created like a three-part video series. Each one is about 5 minutes long, just explaining all the nuances of the plan. The first one being just a basic overview, second one being a little bit of a deeper dive, and the third one being an even deeper dive. So if you just watch the first one, great. If you get all the way to the third one, awesome. You get a really good understanding about how it all works. But 6 weeks, it's going to be really quick challenge. You know, 6 weeks, only 42 nice. Days. It's going to fly by. And an interesting way to think about it is that, you know, a lot can happen in both directions in 6 weeks. So individuals can lose a lot of body weight in that 6 week period, right? But then also other individuals could put on a lot of body weight in that 6 week period. You know, in 6 weeks times, lots of things can happen to our body composition. So if you're sitting on the fence about, should I join this challenge or not? Should I continue with the fitness thing or not? Just think about the hard work that you put in over the past 6 weeks, and then what could happen over the next 6 weeks. And then that might really be pushing you in the direction that you don't want to go. So it's a fitness journey, it's fitness lifestyle, and it's for life.
That's right. And life is going to happen either way. So that's the way to think about it as well. So life will continue on. You may as well jump on the fitness bandwagon and see what can happen within that amount of time, because the time will pass.
The time will pass, whether you like it or not, right?
Exactly.
Now, Nick, we are getting questions about the future of the challenge. Are we going to continue with the 6 week challenge, or are we going to move back to the 12 week challenge? At the moment, you know, we are completing our little mini experiment. We had been running 12-week challenges for 10 years, and we wanted to test out what a 6-week challenge would be like. Would there be an interest in it? Would it lead to more successful results or less successful results? Would it lead to more adherence with the plan, or would it lead to less adherence to the plan? So it's our little experiment. So we're running our second 6-week challenge, and at the moment, at this current stage in time, we are planning to revert back to the 12-week challenge, which will be kicking off towards the end of January next year. So we're having a bit of time off over that Christmas period. We understand that many people are planning to go away now that some COVID restrictions are being lifted. Many people are away for school holidays and on annual leave and things, which is why we're planning to start towards the end of January and kicking off our 12-week challenge again. That's at this stage, but you know, as we all understand with life, things can change moving forward. But that's our plan moving forward, which is going to be good.
Ooh, well, you heard it here first, everybody. And if you think to yourself, well, hang on a minute, I want to start on the 1st of January, why are they delaying it by 3 weeks? That's actually a fantastic thing to do, because a lot of people fall off the bandwagon with strict New Year's resolutions around that time anyway. So the best idea is to not be too extreme, and especially given the circumstances of what's gone on around the country, around the world, give yourself a bit of time to ease into everything and then go absolute ham at the end of January.
It's going to be good.
Yeah.
Now, looking forward into 2022, when we make it to Tuesday, right, in 2022.
Oh, my gosh. Hopefully Dave's listening to this.
Yes. Now, you know, we are planning and developing a challenge app, Nick, a challenge app.
So, reveals.
So sometime in 2022, we'll be releasing our new challenge app, which will take a lot of the functionality that we have built into our templates, such as the training and the nutrition template, and putting it into one application that you can use on your phone. or a device such as like a tablet. Now this app, you'll be able to complete the whole challenge on the app. So you've got to upload your photo, your start photo, your end photo. You can complete your profile. You can jump on the forum. You can ask us questions. You can read some of the content that we've created, watch some of the videos that we created, everything on this one app. So that's an exciting time for us to be able to release this for you. But if anybody out there has worked with developers in the app space, it does take time. So that's what we're working through at the moment. So that's an exciting future of the challenge as we move into 2022, most likely after Tuesday, which is the 22nd of February, 2022. 2222222.
Yeah, that'll be it. That's the big, if we can get through that bug.
That's the day.
We'll be fine. But yeah, we're heavily involved in the design of that in terms of just the content and stuff. So, you know, I think that everybody's going to just really enjoy using that, the app.
It's going to be a great tool for people to use, yeah.
I can't wait.
Now, Nick, let's move on to our first segment here, which is our non-scale victories. Now, Nick, our non-scale victories are a really cool way to look at progress, right? So many of us, when we start our fitness journey, we are really obsessed with the number that's on the scale. And we understand that the number on the scale is important. It gives us lots of information about what's happening in our body. But many individuals put some self-worth in that number where, oh, well, when I was 60 kilos, I was really happy, but I was also 25. But then now I'm 45 and I'm 75 kilos and I'm not happy until I get back to 60 kilos. So many people put this number and have this self-worth into it, which often leads to very negative thought processes when we should be looking at this number on the scales as simply some data, some information. It gives us some information about what's happening in our body, and we can use that information to help our decision-making process. But to help our mindset, our mind frame about how we look at this number, it's important that we start to look at non-scale victories. What improvements are happening in our lives as we are involved in this fitness journey? What changes is happening in our behavior, in our body shape, in the way that we feel, in our strength, in our confidence? What things are changing over time that is a win, right? That is not related to that number on the scales. Now, in our segments on this podcast, we highlight individuals that have highlighted their non-scale victories. But at this stage of the challenge, you know, in between the two challenges, we're going to wait until next week to reveal some more non-scale victories. But I just want to go through some examples of a non-scale victory. So some things that you can look out for. Okay, so the first thing I would say is that the feeling that you get from fitness is really important. The feeling that we get through life and how that translates over into life is really important. So one thing I want you to look out for is, one, your confidence level. So when you are involved in fitness, how do you feel when you're interacting with people? How do you feel when you're interacting with your family, your friends, people that you work with in your job? And do you find that you're improving your level of confidence, that you're just feeling good as a person? And is that coming from fitness? That's really important. Second side of things related to our body composition is how our clothes are feeling. That's really important. You know, are our clothes starting to feel loose? Are we starting to need to buy new clothes? Because that's a really important thing. But then, you know, that change is really big where we go, well, now I could fit in those size 10 jeans, or like, oh, I don't need to buy a 2XL shirt anymore. I can now fit in a 1XL or even just a large again. Like, how awesome is that for some individuals who are quite out of shape? To be able to shop in a normal clothing store is really big deal, okay? And the final thing that I would say is it's looking at our overall strength is a really big one. So that's a big outcome to measure our overall like progress through training is our overall strength. So looking for functional things such as, let's say, a push-up or a chin-up. If you're able to do a push-up, that's awesome. If you can do 5 push-ups, great. If you can do 10 push-ups, that's even better. If you can do a chin-up, that's really cool. If you could do a handstand, if you could do a clean and jerk, if you could deadlift your body weight, if you could do an ass to grass squat, these are really cool functional outcomes that we want to prioritize in our non-scale victories. So if you're unsure about how to progress and you're only looking at your scales, try to look for other things that you can do, such as improving our confidence, changing the clothes that we're wearing so that we're looking at buying smaller clothes, and then some functional outcomes such as being able to do a push-up and a chin-up and a squat. Okay, but I've spoken a lot about non-scale victories. Nick, do you have any comments to say about our NSVs?
I was going to say the other way as well, for people that are trying to put on size, it might be for some people, they might be excited to do a 2XL t-shirt as well. So that's the other way. That's the best thing about the NSVs. They can sort of, they range, they go all over the place. So something that is always an awesome NSV for me to see for women are the things that you've already mentioned, you know, especially I think anything to do with upper body strength. I think overhead pressing, I think any type of a pull-up that's unassisted, that kind of a thing, I know it gives people far more joy than a number on the scales. I know sometimes people might go, I reached this kilo thing, but I'll tell you what, you get a lot more sort of response and respect and all sorts of stuff if you go, look at me doing my pull-ups. Everyone's like, you're a badass. And it's things that people remember. And I remember that that was one of my first goals when I went into the gym years ago. I wanted to be able to do a pull-up. And now look at me now. You know, you never know where it's going to lead if you have those sorts of goals in your mind. So NSVs can really set off a million other things that you never thought that you would achieve.
No, I agree. And I think that goal of being stronger really drives us for progression, right? And if we're, you know, really thinking about body composition, if you just focus on getting stronger, you'll probably notice that your body composition gets better, right? Without focusing too much on you know, the food side of things or like the scale weight or anything like that. If you just focus on getting a stronger deadlift and a stronger squat and be able to do an overhead press and a pull-up and some push-ups, you probably find that you're moving in the right direction with your body composition.
I agree with you. And I also think that it does ultimately lead to being able to regulate and understand your hunger, which is like, it's quite advanced, but at the end of the day, after you've lifted something, you feel pretty hungry and it's actually really valid. And then you want to eat and you want to nourish yourself and then you move on and then you get on with your day. So it's sort of like it's this cycle, really a positive cycle where you actually can't help but eat because you've lifted so much that you're starving. And it's really lovely to have that relationship with food where it's like, I actually want to eat this. I'm hungry. I've just lifted. I need to replenish and then move on. So that's it all starts with NSVs.
All starts with NSVs. Hmm. Now, Nick, let's move on to our next segment here, which is our Coach's Corner, where we offer some tips around training, fitness, health, anything in between, our tips for the week. So, Nick, would you like to start us off for our Coach's Corner this week?
I would. And the funny thing is it sort of carries on from the NSVs because I'm talking about setting smart goals. Now, with the goal that I was going to talk about, it was actually going to be if you want to do unassisted chin-ups, so let's just, or pull-ups, just say that you want to end up doing 12. So how would you do this? So when you set a smart goal, rather than just going, everything will be okay when I feel better, that's, you can't measure that. You can't really measure a feeling. You can't measure anything about that specific goal. So you'll never really know if you get to it because a feeling can change at any time. So somebody wise once did tell me that because I'm a very emotional person. So, you know, I will often go with my feelings and it's not good to measure goals. So a SMART goal is something that is specific. So it SMART stands for specific, measurable, attainable, relevant, and time bound. So say, for example, a pull-up. So a pull-up is attainable for pretty much everybody, but it's going to obviously take a certain amount of time, but you know that you can do it. You know that you can get there and it is specific. So let's just say you want to do, let's say, 5 unassisted pull-ups. So that's your specific goal. You go, I want to do it from, you know, a still point, pulling myself up all the way back down, back up again. I know that Dell, who won our Coaches Award, is actually working on this right now. So she will like this. So that's the goal. It has a clear, highly specific end point. So if it's too vague, it's not going to be smart. So let's remember that. Then it has to be measurable. So you have to accurately be able to measure your progress. So, for example, you might be able to go, okay, today I could do half of one and then in a week I could do one, and so on and so on. And then it needs to be attainable. So it has to be something that's not too ambitious. So, for example, you don't want to necessarily one that I see a lot is someone who starts a bodybuilding competition and says, I want to win my pro card in the first go. So that's something that you might disappoint yourself in, because just getting up on stage the first time, you know, in the best condition that you can possibly be in is usually the most attainable thing. You know, it's those unicorns that get their pro cards straight away. And I know that you won yours straight away, but you were a unicorn. You're a little unicorn.
No, I don't have my pro card. Don't be like that,
Nick. You did win. You did win your division. So you can be a unicorn. Okay.
I could be a unicorn. Yeah.
Yeah, you can be a unicorn, Steve. And then it needs to be relevant. So it needs to be like pertinent to what you're doing. So if it is fitness, it needs to be relevant to fitness. It can't be, you know, I want to get a Ferrari. You know, it needs to actually stay in the fitness realm if it's to do with doing a pull-up. So you might go, yeah, when I get my pull-up, I'm going to be so strong that, you know, Ferrari's going to hire me to be a race car driver. That might just be a little bit irrelevant. So that's probably not necessarily what we need. And it needs to be time-bound. So you could then say, within the six-week challenge, I want to be able to achieve 5 pull-ups. So you need to set the specific, measurable, attainable, relevant and time-bound goals. So just have a think about that when you're setting your goals, because then it often requires a little bit of writing down, which also is something that then helps you to manifest the goal, because you'll see it written down and it just something about that gets it out of your mind onto paper, and you can kind of work your way towards it. And then as we were saying before, like a pull-up isn't just a pull-up. It represents so much. It represents that upper body strength. It represents you getting stronger. It's an NSV, and it's only going to be good.
I like it. And I think goal setting is quite important, because, you know, we go through life and we want things. Like we want a six-pack. We want big biceps, we want to feel strong, we want these things, but they don't really become a thing until you kind of write it down. We can't just kind of go through the fitness motions and expect something to happen. Like we need to be clear about what we want. And once we're clear about what we want, then we can actually go get it. And I think it starts with a SMART goal. And if it starts with a SMART goal, you write it down, you stick it to the wall, you see it every day being like, I'm going to do these 5 pull-ups anyway I goddamn can, you'll get those 5 pull-ups. But if you just go through the motions, you're not going to get those 5 pull-ups. So specific with what you want, and you'll get it. I guarantee you'll get it if that's what you really want.
Exactly. And the thing is, it's not just going to be that goal that you achieve. There's going to be, you know, physical changes, all sorts of stuff that happen from that initial goal. And it's great, because just focusing on that is going to ricochet into other areas, as we spoke about before anyway. So think about for the next challenge something that you'd like to do. And I suggest, as you would probably say as well, that it's something to do with a strength goal, because that's something it's easy for your first SMART goal. If you've never set one before, do a strength one.
I like it.
You can be holding a barbell and you know, doing bodyweight deadlift, something like that. You know, just it doesn't matter, but it's strength goal.
I like it. Mm. I like it, Nick. Now, I want to talk a little bit more science-y, a little bit more physiology-y. Yeah, that's a word.
physiologistically.
Physiologistically. Yeah, we'll make up words. That's what good English writers do. They just make up their own words, right? Yeah. Anyway, this was a question that actually came to me from my clinic. So I work in a clinic as an osteopath, and a patient of mine asked me in different words, but he goes, is your body composition genetic? Okay. And the way he explained it to me was that, you know, if you've been overweight your entire life, is it impossible to lose weight? And his rationale was that he was an overweight individual and he's been overweight in his entire life. And he's tried to lose weight, but he's just never been successful. And he's just at that point where he thinks, well, this is what my body wants. It wants me to be overweight, and it's just impossible for me to lose weight. Hmm. Now, I want to speak a little bit about this, because I think it's an important topic to speak about, because yeah. Sometimes we do, you know, use language like, oh, you're just big boned, or like, oh, it's just what you're meant to be. You're meant to be overweight. And it's a great, you know, rationale. And I'll use the word like excuse. It's a great reason to say like, oh yeah, well, that's it. Like I'm not meant to lose weight, because I'm always just meant to be the fat person, which isn't the case. So the first thing I'll say is that no, there isn't like a genetic thing. It's not like you have a DNA in you that makes you overweight or fat or unhappy with your body composition. When we're talking about obesity as a disease, not just like overweight, obesity is very closely linked to socioeconomic factors and your environment. You know, you are a product of your environment. So for many individuals, me included, who find themselves in overweight positions, we grew up with a lifestyle or an environment that fostered those behaviors. Okay, so for example, firstly, culture. Right. Let's say you're an Italian like Nick. We all know Italian foods can be quite calorie dense. So I'm talking about, you know, pasta dishes, pizzas, these foods. Not that they're carbs and they're bad. No, they're highly calorically dense foods. Individuals growing up in that culture may be exposed to more calories, so they're going to consume more foods so that they get it into a position where they're more overweight. Then you kind of have two individuals, one that grew up with a really Italian culture versus another culture, let's say like a Japanese culture, where they're maybe eating lots of seafood because it's an island country and they have a really big emphasis on seafood in their life, which might be lower in calories than some Italian dishes. So these two cultures have very different responses to obesity or being overweight simply out of their culture. Okay. The next one could be things like environmental factors, like the things literally around you. So let's say myself, I live in the suburbs. Okay. And we know Australian suburbs can be very spread out. So for me to do anything, I need to hop in my car and drive to the supermarket, drive to a shopping center, drive to go see my mate or wherever it is. I need to like actually travel places. Whereas if I lived in like a CBD or a city and I could walk to the supermarket or walk to a cafe or walk to work, okay, then I'm doing more steps because of my environment. I'm able to walk more. And we see this in big studies in places like Europe. And we know Europe, very walkable cities, they have lower incidences of obesity and people being overweight because people can walk more. There's more access to physical activity. So our environment plays a massive role in it. And, you know, different places growing up, you know, put different emphasis on things like sports or recreational activities. And these play a massive role in our overall lifestyle factors leading to obesity. So obesity is a really complex, multifactorial thing. Even things like your socioeconomic status, like if you are a low income earner, you don't have access to, you know, resources that a high income earner could have access to. You know, in some places it's cheaper to go get a meal from McDonald's than there is to like make a salad in your house. Mm-hmm. So then we face discrepancies simply from a socioeconomic standpoint. So what I'm getting at is that obesity or being overweight or being fat or not being happy with your body composition is not likely a genetic cause. It's not like you're born with it. It's more likely a nurtured thing. It's something that is a product of our environment, our habits, our routines, our lifestyle. Okay. Now that doesn't mean that, you know, we put our hands up in the air and go, oh, well, I'm just a product of my environment. I don't have any influence on this. Well, that's where we go, no, not really. If you wanted to, you could make changes to your environment. Not saying that you can change every aspect of it. Okay, if you live out in the suburbs, you can't go move into the city so that you can walk more. No, okay, we can't change that. If you are someone who may be of a low socioeconomic status, you can't, you know, make up money and then try to have all those resources available to you. We understand that, we get that. But it is something that we can influence, right? And we see that in individuals who maybe live in an overweight family. Mum's overweight, dad's overweight, all the siblings are overweight, but one individual is lean. Maybe that individual spent time learning about, you know, what is a calorie? They'll learn about fitness. They're involved in sports. They're being physically active. They're going for a walk after dinner. They're going to the gym. They're training these things. So there's one individual that is of a happy body composition, whereas the rest of the family might not be. So we can intervene with these factors. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, there is some physiological things that happen. So let's say you grew up being really overweight, like me. So I grew up quite obese in my teens. What happens when we are in a large overweight state is that we do grow more fat cells. It's a thing. We grow more fat cells. Just like individuals who train and we go to the gym, we build more muscle and we build some more muscle cells and we call them satellite cells, which means that if me personally, were to not train for a while, I'd probably bounce back really quickly in terms of muscle mass because my body has those cells there. They just kind of got a little bit smaller. Similar with body fat. So like my body fat cells, they're there because I was quite overweight. So I have more fat cells than someone else who's maybe been lean their entire life, which just means that if I'm in a hypercaloric state, my body loves to store that energy. Okay. That doesn't mean that I'm, some special person that, that's it. I'm meant to be overweight. Well, no, I can make those changes. And I'm not overweight now because I know how to portion control. I've learned how to prioritize fitness in my life and build my lifestyle around these values again.
Yes.
But it's not just a predisposition thing for me. Okay. The last thing I'll say is that the biggest impact to this settling point of our body weight, right? So the biggest impact that drives where our body weight is right now is often our response to fed states. So, Nick, if we compare you and I, if we both sat there and had a really big Italian dish, we had pizzas, we had pastas, we had like a calzone with like some garlic bread and I don't know, a bottle of wine, right? So we had
this all at once. No worries.
That's what we call breakfast. Okay. Let's say we pushed ourselves into a highly calorically fed state. So you and I consumed high amounts of calories in one meal. Our response to that varies person to person. So some individuals, when we are in a highly fed state, we want to rest and digest. So we want to sit on the couch. We don't want to move. Like we want to just maybe sit at the dinner table, not even get up. Some of us get sleepy. Some of us want to have a nap. And this then means that, we're highly calorically fed and we drastically decrease our energy expenditure because we're like, we don't want to move, right? Whereas other individuals, you probably know people like this, as soon as they get into a hypercaloric state, they want to do all the things,
I think that's me. I know that because that is me.
They want to dance, they want to clean the kitchen, they want to do the gardening, they want to go for a run, they want to like do all the things when they've consumed lots of calories. Okay. And we do find that people who are more overweight are often people that want to rest and digest after in a hypercaloric state, like me, right? When I eat too much food, when I eat too much food, I want to sit. Don't talk to me. I want to sleep. I don't want to, but then other people that I know want to go and do all the things. Okay.
Is that Laura?
No comment. So when we come down to like our body composition, no, it's not a gene, right? It's not a gene that, you're born with it. Tough luck. No, we can influence it. And it's often around our socioeconomic, lifestyle and environmental factors. These big factors that input to things, which contribute to the disease of obesity, which is why it's an epidemic. We've got lots of these contributing factors which lead people down this path of gaining weight. We can intervene with that with the right education, understanding. And if you're listening to this podcast, you probably have the foundation of that education to make that change. But many individuals don't care for it. That's cool. That's fine. We're not saying that everybody needs to follow the fitness lifestyle, which we hope they do. They want to. But we can make those changes. And the only factor that's probably the big driver of it would be our response to a fed state, if you want to do all the things or if you want to rest and digest. And there are some physiological things such as our fat cell count, but they don't play a massive role, right? When it comes to body composition, it really is a simple equation of energy in and energy out, even though that's really complex to apply that. But it is just that simple equation of that. But that's my coach's corner tip. We have control of our body composition, and no, you're not trapped in a fat prison for your whole life. You can make those changes.
That's great. And also the thing is, if you just equate that to anything health-wise that you have to be aware of, it would just be the same. Just be clinical about it and go, okay, that's something that I need to be aware of. I need to make the changes to facilitate that that's a factor in my life, and I need to work around that. Then you don't need to get too emotional about it either, because we've hypercharged anything to do with fat. It's all emotional. But say if it's a toenail, that you, if you're somebody who always gets an ingrown toenail, that's not something that you get emotional about. You just look after it,
That's right.
Interesting. I love it.
Now, Nick, let's move on to some questions for this week. So the first question is about food scales. Okay, food scales. And the question is, are they necessarily necessary? Do I need a set of food scales? So what advice would you give this person?
I would say you do, but I would also say they don't have to be super fancy ones. So they've just got to be able to basically weigh your food. So they don't have to talk to you. They don't have to cost a lot of money, but they do have to be able to be zeroed out when you put a bowl on there with your ingredients in there. And because what you can't measure, you can't manage. So you need to be able to measure things to know if things are working for you or if they're not. So if you go, this diet doesn't work for me, if you've got all the data, if you come to us and go, I have been measuring with my food scales, this is not working, we have something to work off. Because if you say this is not working, but we don't have any data whatsoever and you haven't been weighing and tracking your food, then our first suggestion would be weigh and track your food. So that's number one.
I like it. And you're right, you don't need any fancy scales. You can go to a Kmart or a Target and pick them up for like $5 or $10.
Supermarket even, I think, has them. None of the ones that I've ever had are super fancy at all.
Yeah. No, I like it. Good. The next question here is, do I need to get a smart watch, such as a Fitbit, Garmin, Apple Watch, that type of thing? Okay. I think smartwatches are really cool. They've come a long way, which from where they've been in the past 10 years or so. I do think that they still have a bit of progress to be made. Okay. They're smart, but they're not that smart. So the best thing that we can use a smartwatch for is to track our steps. Okay. Mm-hmm. So we can do that with a pedometer, right? You could go and buy a pedometer. Or you could also use like an app on your phone. So there's a pretty cool phone app, such as just like the Google Health app or the Apple Health app, where you can download it and it will track your steps from your device, which I think is pretty cool as well. Every way that we measure our steps, there is that element of error up to, 10, even 20% of an error rate. So, when we do buy like a smartwatch, great, you spend a couple hundred dollars and you try to look at that number on the step count and it could be up to 20% off in the step count, which can be quite large. You think you did 10,000 steps, but it's telling you did 20% less, so you're doing 8,000 steps. Okay, that might be scratching your head, being like, oh, well, I guess I've got to do more. And then all those other little features on a smartwatch, geez, they're even more off. Let's say the energy expenditure, which would be like the calorie output that some of these devices give, they could be up to 50% off, which for some individuals, if they're trying to do some napkin math, can be well off. So in most cases, a lot of these numbers give us a guide, but they're not, super accurate. Like, we don't want to lose sleep over these numbers. They can be an interesting guide for us. So to answer the question, do I need to get a smartwatch with a capital N-E-E-D? No, you don't need to get a smartwatch. I've tried to own a smartwatch, but I wear a watch and it annoys me and I end up taking it off. So I don't end up wearing a watch or a device. I keep track of my steps through my phone because I always seem to have my phone on me. So I use other methods to keep track of my energy expenditure. So no, you don't need to get a smartwatch, but they can be pretty cool if you have the budget for it and gives you some interesting information.
Yeah, I agree. I've done both and I've been successful with my goals with and without. So I think it's just a little bit of a tool, but also just as saying, with the 10,000 steps, I will walk next to my mum. She'll have her device, I'll have mine, and we'll have done the exact same steps but have different readings at the end. She might have done 12,000 and I've done 10 because she's tiny. So she's like trying to catch my big giraffe ride. So yeah, that's the interesting thing. So as long as I think it's all about just keeping it the same all the time, no matter what it is. So if you walk for an hour and a half and that is 10,000 steps according to your thing, then that is what you do.
Yep. Even just saying that, like when we're measuring something, the easiest way to quantify it is to measure the steps, similar with like the weight of the food to measure the grams or the mils. Like that's probably the easiest way to quantify it. But, we could measure it in a range of different ways. Like talking about your steps, like if you walk around the block, right? Walk around the block, you can measure it as one block. Okay. Mm. So if you, every day you did like two laps of the block, you can just say, all right, I did two laps of the block. And then if you consistently do two laps of the block, regardless of how many steps it is, because, you know, who cares at the end of the day, we've done two units of the block and we can keep track of that. And then if you wanted to increase your overall step count, you might do three units of the block. Okay. And similar with, let's say, time. If you choose to walk for 60 minutes, 90 minutes, 10 minutes, 5 minutes, whatever the number is, you could keep track of the minutes walked rather than the steps you do. And then you can measure that and go, all right, this day I walked 30 minutes. The other day I walked 5 minutes. And then the next day I walked 45 minutes. What's the average of that? I don't know, about like 30 minutes or so. Then you could compare that week to week going, all right, every day on average, I walk about 30 minutes a day. How can I increase my energy expenditure? All right, let's walk for 35 minutes. So it's just another way to measure things.
Yeah, that's how we used to do it before the watches were around, because I was into fitness way before there were even these things. Even at the gym, we used to go, okay, I'm going to do 30 minutes on the stepper.
Right.
That was really wasn't anything else. So, and that worked.
Yep.
Back in my day.
And look, that kind of links into this next question here. And this next question is actually a common one. And it is, you know, this person writes, I struggle to get enough steps in during the day. I think this individual has a sedentary job. Mm-hmm. And they asked, can I supplement it with a spin bike for 20 minutes? Okay. So Nick, what advice would you give this person?
I would say yes, because the thing is, it's movement, and that's what we're after. We're after movement. So if it's the difference between not doing anything and jumping on that bike, absolutely. So the answer is yes, but I will say, just in my little spinny brain, there are a few little things to just keep in mind. If you start dialing up that resistance and chucking, you know, going up a huge hill, it becomes something else. It's not just like a nice walk, which is what we say for people to do. We're not telling you to do like a massive power walk where you get sweaty. It's just get out in nature, have a walk, you know, breathe and spend some time out there and move. So the problem is you end up expending so much energy that it can actually make you starving. So I just want to say that. So don't go crazy and chuck the RPM on and just go hell for leather and then eat everything back, because you could eat six loaves of bread after doing the spin class. I'm telling you, it just makes you so hungry. It's just such a big, huge lot of energy expenditure. So don't go crazy on it unless you're training to be a cyclist, then absolutely go crazy. But use it as a tool, roll around, get a little bit sweaty, get that heart rate up a little bit, but just sort of think about it as though you were on your walk. You know, how do you feel when you're on your walk? Try and translate that to the way that you're feeling when you're on the bike, because it's just supposed to get you moving. But if it's the difference between doing that or not doing it, then do it. And also just be aware that with cycling, your body adapts very, very quickly to that. So it becomes very efficient at cycling very, very quickly. Whereas with walking, you're kind of always inefficient. That's why it's good. So you have to burn calories, the terrain might change, things like that. But with a spin bike, often it's got a flywheel, which then creates momentum for you. And just there are a little few tricks that happen. You can get a little bit lazy as a cyclist. I'm not trying to be mean to cyclists because I love them. But you know how you see a lot of cyclists that you go, wait a minute, you ride so far, how can you still have that much weight on you? And it's because it doesn't actually expend that much energy. Over time, your body adapts. So just be aware of that as well. So use it as a tool, but don't go too extreme on it. And also just be aware that your body's going to adapt pretty quickly to cycling.
Yeah, I like it. And the only comment I would make is that it would be difficult to directly convert like minutes on the bike to the amount of steps that you did. So let's say your goal was 10,000 steps and you only were able to do 5,000 steps throughout the day. You might be sitting there like, all right, I need to do another 5,000 steps. How many minutes do I need to do on the bike to make it equal? And I don't think that there's a direct translation for that. I think it would need to be in its own category. So if you were an individual who you only averaged 5,000 steps a day and you're looking for a way to supplement that, you'll need to be 5,000 steps plus X amount of minutes on the bike would be the best way to measure that. Then if you wanted to increase your overall energy expenditure, you go, okay, well, what if I did 6,000 steps and then kept the minutes on the bike the same, or if I increased the minutes on the bike. So it need to be kind of two different numbers that we're keeping track of, because I don't think there'll be a really clear conversion between one or no. the other.
The funny thing is, like, if you have an assault bike, they're vicious creatures. They're the ones where you you use the hands as well. It used to be that steps would tick over because you're moving your hands. Like, they're true. If you want to fool your smartwatch, you can always move your hands while you're doing your spin.
Yeah, or what? Put the watch around your ankle or something like that. Yeah.
But look, the thing is, just say 5,000 steps. I mean, that's about a half an hour's walk. So if you want to do time, you just think half an hour. But how much time are you then adding? Because it's meant to be a time efficient thing. So it's like, if you go, oh gosh, now I need to do an hour and a half on the bike, you may as well actually just get out there and walk. But if you're doing it while you're working or something like that, then, yeah, maybe don't exceed, you know, don't do 6 hours or something like that, because that's just going to be ridiculous. So, I always think of, look, if you can get up to like over an hour of just nice exercise doing something, then you're winning, you know.
I like it. The final question here, a little bit more chemistry based. And this person actually messaged me on Instagram, and they wrote to me and asked, what's the difference between L-carnitine and acetyl L-carnitine? And what a great question to receive in your inbox on Instagram.
You will love this question. What a great question.
Everything's right in the world. To get a question like this into your DMs. Slide into the DMs, L-carnitine versus acetyl L-carnitine. Okay.
I wish we could swap DMs.
I get the best. Okay. All right. So, The first thing I'd say is that this is actually kind of a common question. We get questions about acetyl L-carnitine, which is ACLAR, and you could buy this product as a Max or a Maxine product, acetyl L-carnitine. And then L-carnitine is a product that is found within lots of supplements, and it's kind of derived from an amino acid. Now, talking about carnitine itself, carnitine is made inside the body, okay? So it's derived from lysine. Lysine is one of our amino acids. And our body makes it ourselves. And carnitine plays a role in mitochondrial function. So mitochondria, you remember that powerhouse of the cell thing? The mitochondria plays a role in energy and how we utilize energy. And it's kind of part of what's called the Krebs cycle and how we utilize ATP. And that's kind of where creatine comes in and modifies the Krebs cycle. But carnitine plays a role in mitochondrial function. Now, we supplement with carnitine in most products. One, it's actually kind of cheap to put into a product. And two, it plays a role in boosting overall energy and performance. So a great product to add in because our body makes it ourselves. But if we give it more, it gives us a little bit more energy. Now, the difference between L-carnitine and acetyl L-carnitine is that word acetyl. Now, acetyl means brain. And what that means is that acetyl crosses the blood-brain barrier, meaning that carnitine can enter the brain and improve some cognitive functions as well. And acetyl products are used in nootropic groups. So there's people who like to look at nootropics, and nootropics meaning brain performance-enhancing supplements, and you'll find acetyl products, especially acetyl L-carnitine, common within nootropic groups. So that acetyl element of acetyl L-carnitine can promote brain function, which then, because the brain, one of the biggest expenditures of calories in our body or energy in our body, if we increase brain function, we expend more calories. And there's also some studies that suggest that acetyl L-carnitine is digested easier in the gut than just L-carnitine. So, but you know, that might be, you know, a couple percentage points. It's not enough to ride home to, but it can play a role in some individuals. So that's the main difference. Essentially, in the body itself, the body doesn't tell the difference between carnitine. It's just carnitine. It helps with the mitochondria. Just the acetyl side of it enters the brain, which can be helpful for, you know, boosting our brain function, which can play a role in performance. Because, you know, if you're really focused, your brain's ticking over and you're about to squat heavy, you're focused, geez, your technique is going to be nice and beautiful, right? But if you're not focused, if you're off with the fairies, or not that's a bad thing, but you know, you're off in dreamland, you know, you're not really focusing on that squat in that time. So there are some benefits of nootropics or things like acetyl L-carnitine in improving our performance. But hopefully I didn't lose you in some of those words there. I just thought it was an interesting question to receive in my inbox. But supplements are always really cool to think about and how they could improve our function, our performance, not just acutely in the short term, but chronically over the long term. So if you are taking products long term, that's where we can really see some benefits. If you're taking them just for one bout or one dose, you know, we don't really see a big change. Like if you take pre-workout once, all right, you might have a nice workout. That's not going to really make a big change. But if you took a pre-workout for, let's say, a year worth of training, that's a year worth of improved performance in the gym. So that's a year worth of improved gains. And I think that's where the power of supplements lie in. And not to say that, you know, we're just a supplement company and we're trying to sell product. I truly believe that, you know, by nourishing our body with vitamins and minerals from, you know, fruits and vegetables, and some of these vitamins and minerals we can't really get from fruits and vegetables, and we utilize sports supplementation to achieve that, that's when we can make these really big changes in our body, okay? Mm-hmm. Carnitine versus acetyl L-carnitine, there's that.
And you've done lots of different guides that are available on the Facebook group as well into all the different supplements, haven't you? If people are interested in learning a little bit more.
That's correct. Yeah. So I did try to make it in different like levels, right? Because many people not interested in like biochemistry or anything like that. You know, I'll be having very different conversations with different individuals with different levels of knowledge. So I did try to make it like, you know, level one, level two, level three, as we take that deep dive into these ideas. And I've also written some content on the challenge website. You'll be able to find it in the non-signed in area of the challenge website. If you go to maxeschallenge.com.au or maxineschallenge.com.au, go to the blog, you'll be able to find some resources there to help just start to understand supplements. And I promise I don't use big words because I'm not really that smart, so that you can get a good understanding of sports supplementation. Okay.
Excellent. That's a good place to start.
Mm-hmm. And like always, you know, when the challenge is open, you can always reach out to us on the forum and I will give you the best answer that I possibly can to any question that you have. Sometimes I miss the questions on places like Facebook or Instagram, or when people DM me, I don't get a chance to answer every question. If you do have big burning questions, please reach out to us on the forum when the challenge opens. Or if you have a question that you'd like us to answer on the Challenge Weekly Show, you can submit your question via the link in the show notes in the comments. And we'll be able to see it and we're able to give you an answer in our Challenge Weekly Show.
That's right. We'd love to do that. So do that, guys.
We do that. Mm-hmm. Now that wraps up episode number 40, Nick. Episode number 40 of the Challenge Weekly Show. We have entered the Dirty 40s. What name are we going to give this?
Naughty 40s.
Naughty 40s. That's a better one. All right. The Naughty 40s we have entered in the Challenge Weekly Show.
That's exciting. 40s are awesome. 40 hours of us chatting together.
That's like a full-time job, Nick.
I know.
You can sit there 9 to 5 and listen to Coach Nick and I talk about fitness, health, the challenge, and everything in between. And who knows, that could be your work week just listening to us.
Wow.
How exciting. Ooh. If you like this episode, let us know. You could share it on places like Instagram, Facebook. And it'd be awesome if you could leave us a nice review. It helps us to spread the good word. And we'll catch you next week for episode number 41.
Yay. Thanks, everyone.